All right, Rabbosai, good morning, good morning. Agotavach. We have had a beautiful, uplifting, inspirational Shabbos HaGadol, and what a schus it is, Baruch Hashem, to begin another week with the daf, another week with our beloved daf, another week in Maseches Sota. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning. Should to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Nisan. Paul and Kathy Pollack for dedicating all the Shomer Drashos this month in memory of Paul's parents, Shmuel ben Zachariah and Sarah Bas Avram. To thank Avram and Shandy Kelman for dedicating all the Sherman Drushals this month in memory of Avram's mother, Sarah Breina Bas Yoshua Heschel. To thank our Dafyomi sponsors for today. So David Kramer, very beautiful, in honor of the entire Shir, and his Eishes Chayil, listen to this dedication, who through her encouragement, I've been able to complete the following, the Masechtas of Yevamos, Ksuvos, Nedarim, and Nazir. 3.5 years ago, completion of these Masechtos were not even a dream to be on my bucket list. What a beautiful, beautiful dedication. Okay? To the people in our life who really encourage us in Meretz Hashem to do more and to be more. So with that, let us begin. Today's daf is daf dalet. Thank you. Today's daf is daf dalet. We are picking up on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. We actually made some good headway yesterday. He's dapping, still adjusting to the length of Sota Dapping, right? It was so different than Nedarim and Nazir. Okay? So we are picking up in Meretz Hashem Gimel Amud Beis, and we left off yesterday 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 lines up from the bottom. It says Gimel Tanan Hasim. So we learned Shahi B'din. One could have made a Kal v'chomer. So what's the Kal v'chomer? Uma Eidos Harishona She'en Osarta Isra Olam. The first Eidos, which of course is referring to Kinui, right? To warning. So the Eidos regarding Kinui, which of course does not go ahead and create an ongoing Isra, right? Remember again, what are the ramifications of getting, of, well, okay, let's speak to it. So again, Kinui, which itself, Kinui, which itself does not create an ongoing Isra, in the Meskem Zepachos Mishnayim, requires two witnesses. You must remember again, based on the Mishnah, leaving aside the position of Rabbi Yossi, who we saw in yesterday's daf, everyone else agrees that Allah HaLamayis, you need two Eidim for Kinui. So Kinui, which doesn't create ongoing Isra, requires two Eidim, Eidos HaKron, Meshav Sarta Isra Olam, Eidon Din Shlot Iskai Pachos Mishnayim. So we'll say, so certainly again, Eidos HaKron. Now in this context, Rashi says that achrona ultimately means tuma. So tuma should certainly, which remember again, tuma, we were speaking about this idea that tuma could be established even through eid echad, but tuma, which does create an eternal iser, remember again, that would essentially dissolve the marriage, should require two witnesses, tamud lomar ve'eid ein ba. So let's remember again, we go back to that drasha that we had on Beis Amud Aleph, the Eid Ein Ba, called Shiyesh, but it teaches us, no, any form of Eidos, even an Eid Echad, is enough by Tumah. I have the Kal v'chomer, the Eidos HaRishona. So if that's the case, let's make the Kal v'chomer. What's the Kal v'chomer? The Gemara says, Me'ata, Uma Eidos Ha'achrona, Shol Sarte Yisro Olam Miskemes Be'Eid Echad, if Tumah, which does create ongoing Isser, right? Remember again, once there's an Eid Echad by Tumah, effectively, the marriage is over. So ultimately, and that could be done even with an Eid Echad. Eidos HaRishona. So we'll say again, Rishona over here in this context means Stira. Rashi says, Eidos HaRishona, the earlier Eidos, Stira, She'enu Sarte Yisra Olam, Eno Dijit Skaim Be'Eid Echad. Certainly again, so we'll say, so if Tumah, which does create ongoing Isser, can be established through Eid Echad, then Stira should be established through Eid Echad as well. Tamu Lomar, Ki Matzah Ba Ervas Dover. The Pasuk says, he found in her a matter of erva. Ulahalanu omer api shne edim o api shlosh edim yakum davar. Shabbo said, this is the famous gzir shav of davar from mamon. So umab davar omer lahalan api shne edim. Just like by monetary matters, davar means two witnesses. Afkan api shnayim. So to over here, when it comes to stira, you're going to require two witnesses. Two summers, 1 second. Hi, michi matza ba ervas davar nafka. Miba nafka, but that's not where we learn that from. Mostly we learn that from the pasuk of ba, like he matzah ba ervas dover. In other words, ve'edin ba. Sorry, the ve'edin ba teaches us that it's only for tumah that an eid echad is enough, and from that I could infer that for every other stage, one is going to require bona fide eidos. To which the gemara says ba v'lo b'kinoi, ba v'lo b'stira mibayle. To which the gemara says hakinami kamar. Talmud Lomar Ba, so Moshe Enoch and Ami write. From the fact that it says Ve'edin Ba, that's where I learn out that it's only Tuma, where you could go ahead and use an Eid Echad. But for all the other stages, one is going to require legitimate Eidos. Right, the Gemara says, so Ba, Hachinam Kama, Talmud Lomar Ba, Ba Velo Bikinoi, Ba Velo Bistira. Ultimately, the Ve'edin Ba teaches me that Allah Chalamayis, although an Eid Echad will work for Tuma, it will not work for kinui, warning, nor will it work for stira. So which one? V'tuma ba'alma below kinui ubelo stira dilo mehem and eidecha minolam. We'll say, but how do I know? Fine, so we'll say, so just want to point out what we've established so far, which is kind of things we've already established beforehand, that ultimately, again, what is going to be unique concerning tuma is that tuma you can utilize in eidecha. But for kinui and for stira, ultimately, again, one is going to have to utilize basic eidos made up of two witnesses. Now the Gemara asks something very interesting. V'tuma ba'alma, b'lo kinui, b'lo stira, d'lo mehem, and eidecha minolan. They will say, what about, this is actually fascinating, what about a case of tuma that was not preceded by kinui and stira? What would happen, so the Gemara presupposes an eidecha in that case would not do anything. So I'll say, let me just describe what this is. So imagine for a moment, you have an Eid Echad who shows up and says, you know what? Rachel's married to Reuven. That's not what the Eid Echad is saying. We know Rachel's married to Reuven. And then one day an Eid Echad rolls in and he says, by the way, I saw Rachel having relations with Shimon. So I'll say, so what's unique about this case? In this case over here, the Eid Echad by Tuma is not preceded by what? Not preceded by Tuma, sorry, by Kinui and Stira. By Kinui and Stira. So how do I know, says the Gemara, that if an Eid Echad comes along and testifies that Rachel was Mizana, that he's not believed. That Eid Echad is meaningless. How do I know that? So Ne'emar Khan, Ki Matza Ba Ervas Davar, Ne'emar Lahalon, Apishnaim Eidim Oshlosha Eidim Yakum Davar, Madavra Amar Lahalon Eidim Shnaim, Afkan Eidim Shnaim. Because they're both saying, listen to this. What the Gemara essentially says is as follows. The concept that an Eid Echad is believed by Tuma is something unique in the context of Kinui and Stira. And it makes sense, right? Why does it make sense? Because we'll say again, what's the term we keep using over and over again? Raglayim Ledover. So if there's Kinui and there's Stira, and now you have an Eid Echad who shows up and says, by the way, there was Tuma, that's the case where we will go ahead and believe in Eid Echad. But if an Eid Echad just rolls up and goes ahead and gives Eidos that Rachel was Mizana, so we'll say, so then again, not in the context of Kinui and Stira, then such an Eid Echad will not be believed. Because without Kinui and Stira, then we're just in the regular world of Eidos. And in the regular world of Eidos, what do you need in order to establish legitimate testimony? What do you need? Shnei Eidim, Dover Dover, right? Dover Dover, it's just a fascinating halacha. Good. Tan Rabbanan. Margos Viter. Ezu Eidos HaRishona. So what's the matter? When we speak about Eidos Rishona, Eidos Achrona, what is the Eidos HaRishona? Zu Eidos Stira. In this context, I will say, Eidos Rishona refers to the Eidos that Rachel was alone with Shimon, whom her husband Reuven warned her about. What's Eidos Achrona? What does that refer to? Zu Eidos Tuma. This refers ultimately, again, to Eidos regarding the fact that Rachel was not only alone, but rather, again, that she actually had relations with Shimon. Top of Dalet. So we'll say, now we get, this is actually very interesting, the Kama Shir Stira, right? Now let's delve into the details. So we'll say, here's what we know. We know that there's a concept of a warning, where Reuven says to his wife Rachel, do not be alone with Shimon. And then if she violates the warning, and she is alone with Shimon, Stira, ultimately that triggers the Sota process. Now asks the Gemara, how long does she have to be secluded with Shimon in order to trigger the Sota process? To which the Gemara says, Kedei Tuma. Enough time for something immoral to have occurred. Right? Nebo say, how long is Kedei Tuma? Kedei Bia. Enough time for relations. Kedei Hara. So we'll say, we'll talk about this, but Kedei Hara means essentially the beginning of relations. Now, how halacha is going to define the beginning of relations is going to be something that's quite interesting. So Kedei Hara could mean a number of different things, as we'll discuss. It can mean the amount of time for initial penetration, or it could also mean just the amount of time for physical contact. Again, we'll discuss all of this. The Gemara gives other shiurim. Kedei HaKafas Dekel, the amount of time it takes to walk around the palm tree. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Kedei Mizig HaSakos. Rabbi Eliezer says it's the amount of time that it takes to dilute a glass of wine. Also remember, again, we've seen this many times already, that Halacha Lamaisa, they used to have like wine concentrate. And if you wanted to go ahead and have a glass of wine, what would you do? Take a little bit of glass of wine concentrate and dilute it. So that's the amount, again, these are all just different shiurim for what we'll call the shiur of stira. Stira, in other words, Rachel has to be alone with Shimon long enough for something to have occurred. So the fundamental shaila is, how long is that? How long is that? And that's all these different shiurim. Rabbi Yeshua says, Kedei Lishtoso, not the amount of time to dilute the glass of wine, but rather what? The amount of time to drink the glass of wine. Ben Azai says, Kedei Litzlos Beisa, the amount of time it takes to roast an egg. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kedei Lagoma, the amount of time it takes to swallow an egg. Rabbi Yehuda Mesera Omer, Kedei Lagmoa Shalosh Beitzim, the amount of time it takes to swallow three eggs. Right? Bzuachrazu, one after the other. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yirmiyah Omer, Kedei Likshar Garde Nima. This is very interesting. I would say if a person is a weaver and the string, the thread breaks, rips, the amount of time it takes to retie the two pieces of thread to each other. Chanin ben Pinchas Omer Kedei Shetoshit Yad L'Sochpia Litol Kisam. Chanan ben Pinchas says the amount of time that it would take the woman to put her hand into her mouth in order to remove something that got stuck between her teeth. Right? Plimo Omer Kedei Shetoshit Yad L'Sal Litol Kikar. So Plimo says the amount of time that it would take her to go ahead and put her hand into a basket in order to remove a loaf of bread. And Afa Pishin Rai L'Davar Zecha L'Davar. Even up in his last one, there's the Gemara wants to bring a script. Plimo wants to bring a scriptural allusion. What's a scriptural allusion? Ki ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem. So I will say again, he's quoting over here, all that's happening in that pasuk is that the pasuk itself is comparing a loaf of bread, ultimately, again, to an immoral woman. Again, we're actually going to dash in that pasuk a little bit later. Fine. The chol hani lamali. I will say, here's what's interesting. Why do I need all of these shiurim? In other words, why don't you just say the amount of stira, right? How long does stira have to be in order to trigger the sota process? Enough time for something to have occurred. That's it. Why are you getting into all this? To which the Gemara says, Srichi, di tana kedei tuma. See, here's what's interesting. Because the Gemara could have just said, kedei tuma, which it sounds like the amount of time it takes for an act of relations to occur. Havamina, kedei tuma, va'aritzusa. I would have thought, again, that what does kedei tuma include? It includes the amount of time for the act itself of bia. But maybe you'll say, aritzusa is like the seduction. So maybe it's not just the act of bia, but maybe ultimately it's the lead up as well. Kamash malon kedei bia. Therefore, I will say, all of these shiurim are trying to come about to give us a more precise time frame to understand that the shiur for stira, is in fact only the act itself and not anything prior to the act. So the itani kedei bia, if we just say kedei bia, havamina kedei gemar bia. I would have thought about saying, what does bia mean? Bia means the entire act from beginning to end. Kamash molon kedei ara. Therefore, the Gemara gives these opinions, kedei ara, which means the initial part of bia. Now, what that means, again, contact or penetration, so that in and of itself is going to be a machlokas, but what it means is, it doesn't have to be the entire amount of time for a complete act of bia. V'yashmini kedei ara, and it would just say kedei ara, havamini kedei ara, v'artzusa. I would have thought, again, perhaps that means initial penetration, but also the seduction that comes before it. Kamash molon kedei tuma. Therefore, we'll say again, the Gemara wants to just give us this idea that it really, the amount of stira, if you think about it, is really just a very small, it doesn't have to be a very long time. In other words, it's a relatively small amount of time because really, it's really just this initial beginning of the bia. That's just enough time for stira to have occurred and for the sota process to be triggered. The kama, ara, I will say, how long is ara? Kidia kafas dekel. The amount of time it takes to walk around the palm tree. Okay? So we'll say the Gemara raise the cash. Or mini, the nistera, the kama shirstia. We'll say it's another braisa. When the pasuk says ministera, that she is alone with the man that she was warned about, how long is the shirstira? Lo shamanu. So we'll say, I'm sorry, the kama, shirstira lo shamanu. So we'll say in general, what's interesting is, Torah says that she's secluded with this man. How long? Well, fascinatingly enough, the Torah doesn't actually give us a shir. Listen to this. Kishu Omer, v'hinitma'a, that she was defiled. So we'll say, so remember again, that means bia. We'll say first wide line, dalet amud aleph, havi omer, kedei tuma, kedei bia, kedei ara, kedei chazaras dekel, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, oh, once it says v'hinitma'a, that means seclusion has to be long enough for some type of defilement to occur. That's the amount of time for bia. That's the amount of time of hara. And if you just want to quantify that, the amount of time it takes to walk around the palm tree. Fine, that's Rabbi Eliezer. Sure, Beshua says, kedei meziga sakos. The amount, so we'll say, so we're going to go through this again. The amount of time it takes to dilute a cup of wine. Benazai omer kedei lishtosa. The amount of time it takes to drink the wine. Rabbi Kiva omer kedei litzlos beisa. The amount of time it takes to roast an egg. Rabbi Yudah ben Seira omer kedei legoma, to swallow the egg. So the Gemara says, one second. Chasar adaitcha, hainu akafas dekel, hainu chazaras dekel. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. Right, what's interesting is there's two different wordings that's used over here. Rabbi Eliezer used the phrase chazaras dekel. Rabbi Osai, bepashtos, what chazaras dekel means according to Rashi is the amount of time that it takes when the wind blows the palm tree for the palm tree to come back into place. Right, so we have chazaras dekel and we have hakafas dekel. What's about it? You know what's interesting about this is, you know, we over time, Jews, we've become like such urban dwellers. So when we hear stuff like this, like, I didn't know palm trees blow in the wind, right? That's interesting. In other words, or the amount of time it takes, how long does it take to walk around the palm tree? Right? So it's just fascinating. Again, so obviously it's reflecting obviously a much more, you know, bucolic type of lifestyle, which was just much more embedded in nature. So again, some of these things were just like second nature to them. Whereas for us, it sounds a little bit strange in any event. So we assuming now that Chazaras Dekel and Hakafas Dekel are the same thing. To which the Gemara says, Hasam Amar Bishmol Kedei Hakafas Dekel Upalik Rabbi Eliezer Alei. Suppose listen to this. Beforehand, Rabbi Shmuel said the amount of time it takes to walk around the palm tree, and Rabbi Eliezer was arguing on him. Hacha Amar Rabbi Eliezer Kedei Chazaras Dekel. And here Rabbi Eliezer himself is saying Chazaras Dekel. To which the Gemara says, Amar Abaye Hakafa Beregel Chazara Beruach. The truth is, they're really the same shear. They're just referring to two different things. Hakafa, obviously, again, walking around means you're walking around on foot. Chazara, as we just said before, means the amount of time it takes that when the wind blows the palm tree, for the palm tree to come back. But in reality, they're a similar shear. By Rav Ashi, Chazara Beruach, so let's listen to this. When we speak about the blowing of the palm tree and then it coming back into place, what does that mean? Chazara Beruach, Kihechi da'azl v'hadr asi? Does it mean, O'dilma, Kihechi da'azl v'asi v'hadr kai biduchte? Does it mean, ultimately, again, just swaying to and fro? Or does it mean swaying and then coming back to rest in its original position? To which the Gemara says, Teku. Okay. Hasim Amra Belezer Kidei Mziga Sakos. So we'll say before Nebeloza said the amount of time that it takes to dilute a cup of wine, Hacha Kidei Chazaras Dekel. And here in this price he's saying the amount of time it takes for the palm tree to blow back into place. So we'll say, so which one is it? Which says, it's not a contract, it's not a kasha. Idi vi idi chachiru. It's actually one amount. One shear. So we'll say, now what we're going to do, by the way, you're going to see is what we're going to do is we're going to take a lot of these opinions, we're going to consolidate them and recognize that, in fact, a lot of these things are actually talking about the same amount of time, just different expressions. So first, some of the eight, so the Gemara says as follows. Good. Hasam Amra B'Yeshua Kedei Lishtoso. Ha'cha Amra Kedei Meziga Sakos. Before Amra B'Yeshua said the amount of time it takes to drink the cup of wine, here he said the amount of time it takes to dilute it. So the Gemara says, Ema kede limzog v'lishtos. Maybe meant to say the amount of time that it takes to dilute and drink. V'leima idi v'idi chachihuruhu. But why don't you just say maybe it's just two expressions of the same shear? In other words, maybe the amount of time it takes to drink a cup of wine, the amount of time it takes to dilute the wine is one shear. If that's the case, imkein hainu Rabbi Elazar. If that's the case, he's saying the same thing as Rabbi Elazar. Hasam Rabbi Nazai, kedei litzlos beis. So before Rabbi Nazai said the amount of time it takes to roast an egg. Ha'achama kedei lishtoso. Here he says the amount of time it takes to drink. Idi v'idi chachiru. In reality, again, it's the same share. Fine. Hasam am Rabbi Akiva kedei legoma. Ha'achama kedei litzlos beis. Before Rabbi Akiva said the amount of time it takes to swallow an egg. Here he says the amount of time that it takes to roast it. Ema kedei litzlos beis ulegoma. What Rabbi Akiva meant to say is it's the amount of time that it takes to what? To roast it and to swallow it. I maybe it's all one shear. Imkein Hainu Ben Azai. So, in other words, maybe both of those things are the same shear. If that's the case, then Rabbi Akiva is not really differentiating himself from the position of Ben Azai. Hasama Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira, Kedei Ligmo Shlosha Beitzim Zuachazu. In the first place, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira said it's the amount, that Tumah is the amount of time ultimately it takes to swallow three eggs consecutively. Hach Amar Kedei Ligoma. Here he says in order to swallow. Dvar of Rabbi Akiva Kamar. So he was answering up Rabbi Akiva. The karma sharin bitzliya ubigemia. So ultimately, again, because Rabbi Akiva was saying that it's both the roasting and the swallowing. Imashir gemia luchude. Why don't we just say ultimately again that the shear of gemia is its own shear? Kedei legamea shlosha beizim zuachazu. Dahinu tzliya ugemia. Fine. So we'll say, so lemaisa again, just to consolidate and to simplify, here's what we know. We know again, just to track our process. First step in the sota process, kinoi. Let's go with the assumption right now, like the Rambam does, not the assumption, as the Rambam paskins. So kinoi is going to require two edim. After she violates the edos, she violates the kinoi, and ultimately then there's stira. So again, stira is only problematic if what have we just established? If she's alone, kidei tuma. Kidei tuma. And I will say, what is the shear of tuma, right? So here we go, right? So I'll say, if we want to consolidate, essentially the shear of Tumah is enough time for at least the initial stage of Bia to occur. And again, and literally again, it's only the small amount of time for the initiation of the actual physical act itself, not anything that precedes it, nor does it have to be the amount of time for a complete act of Bia to occur. And all of these different opinions are just trying to quantify this amount of time. Beautiful. We're not finished yet. Rabbi Elazar ben Yirmiyah Omer, Kedei Shik Shagad Dinema. So as Rabbi Elazar ben Yirmiyah said, that Kedei Tumah is the amount of time that if the weaver, if his thread broke, the amount of time that it takes to tie the two pieces back together. By Rav Ashi, the Merchak o the Mikrov. So again, are we talking about a case where the two pieces of thread were distant or close to each other, right? If you're a weaver, and the thread breaks, now you have to go ahead and tie it together. So we'll say, there's the act of tying it together, but what else is there? There's the act of getting the two disparate pieces and tying them, and bringing them together. So we'll say, so what are you talking about? The two ends of the thread, are they far apart, or are they close? To which the Gemara says, teku. Ultimately, again, the Gemara leaves this question open. Plima omer kadeshatoshit yadol asal, lital kikar. Plimo said the amount of time that it takes her to put her hand in the basket and take out a loaf of bread. So by Rav Ashi, demahadik or delamahadik. So I will say, so number one, did I skip? I skipped, sorry. Chalim HaPinchas, sorry. Chalim HaPinchas Omer Kedei Shetoshit Yad L'Soch Pia Lital Kisam. So Chalim HaPinchas said the amount of time that it takes her to put her hand into her mouth, literally, both say, to remove like a splinter, to remove something from her mouth. So by Rav Ashi, demahadik or delamahadik. We talk about when the item that she's removing is embedded in her mouth or not embedded in her mouth. To which the class is going to say, obviously, if it's embedded, it's going to take more time. Not embedded, it's going to take less time. Tegu. Plima omer kadesh toshu yadol asal lital kigar. So Plima said the amount of time that it takes her to put her hand into the basket to extract a loaf of bread. So by Rav Ashi, demehadik adlamahadik. What's the story with the bread? Right? Is the loaf of bread ultimately, again, right, stuck in the basket or not stuck in the basket? Bechadita obatika. Is it a new basket or an old basket? So Rashi points out, what's the chiluk between a new basket and an old basket? So he says, an old basket is already broken in. A new basket will often have, the image is the basket they're using is like one that's made out of reeds. So in a new basket, you still have like reed splinters that are sticking up. Because of that, it impedes, right? It takes a little bit more time to pull something out of the basket because the item can get stuck on the splinters that are extending. So a new basket or an old basket? Bechamima o bikarira. Are we talking about a warm loaf or a cold loaf? A warm loaf, you have to be much more careful when taking it out because you don't want it to crumble. We'll say other days. Bidichiti o bidisari. Ultimately, again, is it a barley loaf or ultimately, again, a wheat loaf? So Rashi again points out, shalchit in chalak v'nishma dos mishalsor. Apparently, wheat loaves are smoother than barley loaves, so they can slip out of the hand easier. Birikika o ba'akusha. Is it a soft loaf, right? Or is it a hard loaf? To which the Gemara says, teku. Okay, so we'll say, so obviously, again, there are these variables that exist. I don't know if you saw Bar Yosef, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Kolecha ba'ech, so this is very interesting. Now, we'll say, see, now the Gemara asks, essentially, it's fascinating to see, right? Let's be clear. Obviously, there's a distinction in these shiurim, right? Because if there wasn't a distinction in the shiurim, then what? Then what? We wouldn't be having this conversation. Right? So obviously, again, when this one says, k'dei chazaras dakal, and this one says, k'dei ligmoa beitzim, and this one says, k'dei meziga asakos, k'dei shtia asakos, obviously, there's a machlokes, because if there's not a machlokes, in other words, we don't need so many opinions to illustrate the same shiur, to say the same amount of time. So what's this fascinating? So therefore, again, Rabbi Yisrael says, and Rabbi Yosef, call echad the echad the atzmo shiur. Rabbi Yosef, each one of these opinions, ultimately, again, was basing the shiur based on his own experience. Rashi says over here, ba'atzmo shiur, kama shahaya shah bebi asof. So again, Rabbi Yosef, these are all married men. So therefore, again, the Gemara is saying, they came up with the shiur of k'dei bi'av, k'dei tumah, based on their own experiences. So I said, this is fascinating. Really? Va'ika ben Azai, delo nasi, but one second. Ben Azai is in this conversation, and Ben Azai himself never married. Now, I will say, take a quick look at Rashi. First, last wide line in Rashi, Va'ika ben Azai, delo nasi, kidamer bi'iv, I'm supposed to remember this, ava ma'ese, shenafshi chashka batorah. So I will say, remember again, Ben Azai was this incredible personality who said that nafshi chashka batorah, you know, I already have a love of my life. And the truth is, I have no more love to give, right? I have no more attention to give because all I want is Torah. And essentially, marrying someone would go ahead and deprive that person of the real affection that I have that's totally tied up in Torah. So ultimately, again, so Ben Azai is commenting on this, yet he has no first-hand experience, to which the Gemara says, Ibais ema nasit upirish ava. So first of all, remember, the Gemara Tosas in Yavama springs down that Ben Azai did get married. Who did Ben Azai marry? Who did he marry? Rabbi Akiva's daughter. Rabbi Akiva's daughter, the daughter of Rachel, right? Ultimately, again, so he was married and then he separated. So whether separated means that ultimately, again, he got divorced or just that, whatever, he didn't live with his wife. But the mice, the possibility one is he did get married. Possibility two, Ibai Zema, that when Ben Azai gives his shir ultimately again is based on, got from his Rebbe, or Ibai Zema says incredible, Sod Hashem Li Yireyav. But say the other possibility is the secrets of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are conveyed to those who revere him. And I was saying, there's a concept, ultimately, again, that when a person is embedded in Torah, there are just certain things they understand. And I will say, you know, there's a term that's often used today that I think is sometimes not fully understood, the concept of Das Torah. And I will say, what's Das Torah? Das Torah is a concept that says that when a person lives a life that is totally shakua, that is totally immersed in Torah, that they have an understanding of the world that is just a different kind of understanding. And that's why not every person, right? Person could be a Talmud Chacham, but they don't have Das Torah. Right? Just like a person could be a rabbi, and they don't have Das Torah. Right? In other words, Das Torah is this concept that, let me give you this on a simple level. I was saying, how do you feel after you finish Nafilim? Right? How do you feel after you finish a Blat Gemara? Right? You feel great, but what else? What else? There's a clarity. Right, it's. I always find like the clearest moments of the day. The clearest moments of the day is right when you finish the Blat Gemara. You finish learning. You see the world with a certain level of clarity. You see yourself with a certain level of clarity. The problem is, then you walk out, right, and that's when like everything like just turned upside down. But it's the most beautiful part about Torah, right? The most beautiful part about Torah is that when I finish learning, the world makes sense to me. I make sense to me. I have a sense of clarity. That clarity, that's like a tipa shebetipa. Like that's like a little piece of what it means to have Das Torah. So Das Torah is a person who is embedded in Torah. A person, again, who's living a life that is constantly immersed in Torah, has a life clarity and sees the world through different lenses. And they're able to understand things that the truth is sometimes the rest of us cannot. So the Gemara suggests maybe Ben Azai just knew stuff. He just knew stuff. How do you just know stuff? So Hashem Li Yireyav. So sometimes the secrets of the world, the secrets of life, the secrets to meaningful living are given over to those who embed themselves in a lifestyle of Torah. It's an incredible idea. Darsha Avira. So let's listen to this. So Darsha Avira. Zimnin Amrali Mishmeid Rabbi Ami. Zimnin Amrali Mishmeid Rabbi Yasi. So let's listen to this. Rabbi Avira Darsha. Rabbi says, incredible Gemara. Kala ochel lechem balon etila sedayim. Kiluba al isha zona. So this is pretty wild, right? Right? Whoever eats bread without washing, Rabbi says, he's talking about al netila sedayim, right? He's talking about ritual washing. Whoever eats bread without netilas yadayim, it's as if he committed adultery. Okay, so the Gemara says, Shine emar ki ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem. So it's according to the Pasuk in Mishlei. Now, all the Gemara is doing over here is just noting the juxtaposition between isha zona, right? So we'll say, by the way, in this context, isha zona doesn't just have to mean like a harlot, like a prostitute, but isha zona means any woman who's not permitted to you. Right, so ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem. So if Lady Mars dashing it is, if you do not take the proper measures and proper steps to consume your kikar lechem b'kedusha b'tara, it's as if you're having relations with a married woman. Right? I'm sorry, isha zona. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, if that's the case, so I'm going to say, before we go on, what is this? Right? Well, you want to tell me it's bad to eat without netilas yadayim, I got it. But literally, again, that a person who goes ahead and eats bread without netilas yadayim is as if he's having relations with the zona, they both say, look at the Tosfos Shans. So, okay, we're going to try this. Let's take it back to my rush days. Right? We'll say, Tosfos Shans is on the right-hand margin. Right-hand margin. Do you have it on the right-hand margin? Yeah. Okay, so far, so good. So I'll say, so five lines in. Yeah. Good. Ah, oh, excellent. Yeah. So that tells the chance. So look what he says. Kala ocha lechem baloni tias dem ki lubal isha zona, shinem akibak isha zona, ad kikar lechem perish. It's perish. Darish lay misseifa l'resha, vishol kikar lechem, mischayi ba'one shol isha zona. Olohachi midamila li isha zona, mishum tekesha ocha baloni tila, Havi achila hefker, vizona zu mifmath keresi. So I say, it's such a beautiful pshat. So I say, what's the whole chap of brachas before we eat? Why do I have to make a bracha before I eat? To show that ultimately, again, this bread belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm taking it from Hashem, but the only way I'm able to take it is ultimately if I recognize who the owner is. That's the whole yisod. So I'm going to go ahead, and before I eat, and before I consume anything, I say, Ribono Shel Olam, this is your bread. I'm asking you for permission to go ahead and eat it. I see your beauty, your kiddusha, your incredible kait. I see it in this loaf of bread. So I also watch this. So if you go ahead and you just eat bread, if I eat bread without nitilasem, without the proper preparations, then essentially it's making the bread like it's hefker, like it's ownerless. So I'll say, that's like an Isha Zona. Who's an Isha Zona? What's an Isha Zona? She's Mufkeras. And she's hefker for everyone. Right? She's hefker, right? She's not tied down. She's not committed to any relationship. It's hefker. So a person who goes ahead and eats bread without netilas yadayim, that's a consumption of hefkeros. Right? It's ownerless. It's nothingness. It's just out there. So a person who takes that approach to the bread, it's like he's having relations with an Isha Zona. Hefkeros. It's a different, because I just want to point out something interesting. I was like, you know, what, okay, it's going to sound strange, but if you think about it, what's the prohibition of relations with an Isha Zona, right? It's only a law. Now, again, I'm not, when I say only a law, in other words, it's not like adultery, and it's not like other arayos, which carry with them a chi of misa. A man goes to a zona. I want to go on record. Against it, right? Right? But, it shouldn't be any, right? Against it. But lemaisa, what's the prohibition? Assuming there's no ashchasa, zera, things like, okay. So it's a love. It's an inappropriate thing to do. Contrast that again with all the other forbidden relations with the isra misa. So listen, what Gemara is saying over here is you eat bread without netilas yadayim. It's like going to an Isha Zona. You're living a life of hefkeros. Of hefkeros. Right? Again, that bread belongs to someone. Specifically to the Ribono Shel Olam. So there's a process. There's a process for redeeming it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You bypass that process. That's a life of hefkerus. Just like going to an Isha zone. Incredible. Problem Gemara says is, Amarava, the pasuk then should be written differently. It should say, Hai ba'ad Isha zona ad kikar lechem, ba'ad kikar lechem ad Isha zona miboyle. If that's the case, it should put the bread before the Isha zona. Right? Because then the drasha is, if you eat bread without netilas yadayim, it's as if you've gone to an Isha zona. And Amarava, therefore, Amarava says, no, what it means is something different. Kalabal Isha zona, L'sof mefakesh kikar lechem. We'll say what it means is, what the pasuk means to say is, if a person goes ahead and goes to an Isha zona, at the end of the day, he's going to be begging for bread. And we'll say, what's the pshat? A very simple idea. When a person loses themselves in immorality, the pursuit of immorality can become totally all-consuming to the point that what? That a person loses sight of all of their other responsibilities. We'll say, we see this all the time, no? We see this all the time. And it's one of the biggest, like, Musa Haskell's, you can get, like, people make the most overwhelming and terrible life mistakes for the satisfaction of some type of carnal desire. And as Maisim B'chol Yom, people throw away everything. They throw away everything because of the temptation. Do we understand the temptation? Of course, we're human beings. We understand the temptation. But the whole chat in life is to try to kind of do like that cost-benefit analysis. Sure, I want to satisfy this urge, but what is it going to cost me? And is that cost, is that loss worth satisfying that desire? So the Gemara says, the person who becomes embedded in a lifestyle of immorality, the person who goes after the Isha Zona just represents just giving in to all of the immoral urges and wants and lusts in life. Just understand, if you sign up for that lifestyle, it's going to eclipse everything else. You're going to lose sight of everything else to the point you're not going to take care of your mishpacha, you're not going to take care of your parnasa, and ultimately, again, it'll end up leaving you begging for bread. It's incredible, incredible. Bimar goes weiter. Amar b'zrika, kol mezalzel ben tilas yadayim ne'akar min ha'olam. Plus another incredible Gemara. Rabbi Loza says, so whoever goes ahead and little mezalzel ben tilas yadayim. So what's mezalzel ben tilas yadayim means? You don't wash before you eat. You don't wash for bread. You don't. What's going to end up happening? Ne'akar min ha'olam. So I say, also very interesting. What is ne'akar min ha'olam? Again, we assume ne'akar min ha'olam means you die, right? Which once again seems a bit hyperbolic. So because I understand not washing your tzadim is certainly not good, but because I don't wash tzadim, suddenly again I'm going to die. Not coming on. So we'll say, so perhaps what it means is like this. Remember, if you don't wash your hands, so we'll say, what does that really represent? That you don't understand the seder with which the world runs. You don't understand there's a seder, there's an order. What's the order? The Ribbono Shel Olam provides me with things, and I'm allowed to partake of them as long as what? As long as what? I recognize who it comes from and I express my gratitude. If the failure to wash before you eat bread represents an uprooting of that seder, an uprooting of that order. Now let's say, a person who doesn't live life with a proper seder, ne'ekar min ha'olam. Ne'ekar min ha'olam doesn't mean you're going to die. Ne'ekar min ha'olam means you are uprooted from successfully. Now let's say, the key to successful living is seder. Somebody said it. Who said it at the scene? It was Larry Franks. That the ikar of Daf Yomi is the Yomi. Is the Gedalia? Ah, good. All right. Gedalia. Right? Most beautiful thing, right? The ikar of, right? It's the Seder. Right? So a person who's mezalzel in the Tilas Adai means I'm not a person of Seder. This is a Seder. How do you eat bread? How does a Yid eat bread? A Yid washes his hands, makes the bracha of Al-Netilas Yadayim, says Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz, that's the Seder. Well, if you don't have Seder in that, probably means you don't have Seder in a lot of other stuff in life. And if you don't have Seder, Ne'ekar Min Ha'olam. Ultimately, again, you're not going to die, but you are going to be uprooted and totally detached from any type of meaningful and successful living. Successful, productive life requires seder in every single area. The Gemara goes back to the Gemara says, "I'm Rav Chiya Bar Hashi." We're making such good time until I got to these Gemaras. Okay, fine. Let's get ready for this. So interesting halach over here. This is why I told you sota is the most incredible masechta, because in every single daf, almost every single daf, there's incredible halacha, incredible hashkafa, incredible agarata, all there. So my mishonim, what's the interesting halacha? My mishonim, a person goes ahead and washes, right? My mishonim refers to washing before you eat bread. Tarach sheyagbia yadav lamala. After you wash, you're supposed to lift your hands up. Let's lift your hands up. My machronim, tarach sheyashbia yadav lamata. By machronim, you keep your hands pointed down. So Rashi points out over here the fundamental distinction between the two. Because we'll say, what we are concerned about ultimately, again, with my Rishonim is that if you hold your hands down, some of the water, remember again, the way it works in my Rishonim is first washing is to remove, first, in other words, we're washing twice on each hand. First, right, two. First washing is to go ahead and remove the tumah. Second washing is to remove the water. The concern is that if you hold your hands down, some of the water may go past the wrist and then come back down and remitame the hands. That's why you go ahead and hold the hands up. It's interesting. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that some have the custom to say, Su'u yedeichem kodesh u'barfu es Hashem. The Mishnah Berurah himself doesn't like that minog. Doesn't like that minog. He feels that it's a potential hafsik. But again, it is a minog. So if you happen to have that minog, you see the light by the Hasidim and by the Sfardim who have this. So again, if you do it, fantastic. If you don't do it, this is not the thing to take on, right? Yeah, there are other things to take on in Mir Hashem, but just interesting. But the idea is su'u yideichem kodesh, right? Lift up your hands. Mayim achronim on the other, we'll say, why do you wash mayim achronim? Well, at least the original concept of mayim achronim is because of Melech's domus, this sodomite salt, which was so powerful that Chasam caused blindness. So this way you hold the hands down so that the water should just trickle to the ground and not rub your eyes with it. Okay, good. Tainah, Yachabai says, first is a yod, I know until yod, it's actually, I be a yod of malo. Person washes his hands, he has to lift his hands up. Shema yetsu mayim v'chutz l'prak. Out of concern that maybe, again, by mayim v'shonim, the water will go past the wrist. V'yachsiru v'yitmu esaydaim. And then we'll come back and be matam of the hands. I'm Rabbi Yavo. Kala ochal pas b'lo nigo. Whoever goes ahead and eats bread without first properly drying his hands. Kilo ochal lechem tameh. It's as if he's eating impure bread. Shneamar tayomer Hashem kachal yochlu bnei Yisrael slachmam tamei. Oh my! So we'll say so again. That's just, by the way, it doesn't even have to be anything esoteric there. That's just out of concern that lamais again, perhaps some of the water was rimatame in the hands, and now you're bringing that to the loaf of bread. Okay. So the Gemara says, my ve'eshes ish nefesh yikara tatsud. So we'll say, what's the meaning of the pasuk in Mishlei? Same pasuk of kiba ad isha zorat gigar lechem. Says ve'eshes ish nefesh yikar tatsud. A married woman sometimes could ensnare a precious soul. What is this referred to? I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. We'll say this is wild. Ko adam shish bo gasas haruach lebasof nichshal ve'eshes ish. A person who is arrogant ultimately is going to come to commit adultery. Shneamar ve'eshes ish. Nefesh yikara tatsa. So we'll say, how does the Gemara sing that in the Pasuk? In this context, yikara is referring to arrogance. The arrogant person ultimately, again, will chas hashalom come to go ahead and commit adultery. We'll say, what's the pshat? So the truth is, it's incredibly profound. We'll say, what's the chap of arrogance? When a person is arrogant, right? Everything is about me. And everything is about my comfort and my happiness and my pleasure. Well, if everything becomes about me, then it doesn't matter the impact that my indulgences have on anyone or anything else. A person like that knows indulgence with no limitations, indulgence with no boundaries, because everything is just about the satisfaction of my pleasure. Well, if everything is just about the satisfaction, right, of me, then by definition, of course, a person is going to trespass into the world of the prohibited as well. So Gemara goes back to Rava says, if that's the case, Hai nefesh yikara nefesh gavoa mi boile. Why does it use lashon of nefesh yikara? It just say nefesh gavoa, which is a better way to say arrogant. Va'od hi tatsud mi boile. Allah Amar Rava, here we go, Rava says into this, Kalaba al ishes ish. The means to say is like this, any man who commits adultery, even if a person learned a lot of Torah, d'chsiv ba, yikara hi mipninim, right? Even if such a person learned a lot of Torah, where again, by a Torah it said it's more precious than pearls, mi kohen gadol, shenichnas lefnayel v'lefnim, even from the Kohen Gadol who goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, he titzu denu, ultimately this sin will ensnare him, ledina shel gehenem. So Rabbi say, what the Gemara essentially is saying is like this. There are certain averis, which are very hard to rebound from. And it was, if you remember again, like the Gemara Maseches Brachos brings this down. And the Pasuk in Kohelet, Mu'uvas lo yuchal liskon, v'cheshron lo yuchal imanos. Something that is bent, or something that is crooked, cannot be made straight. So the Gemara gives, what's an example of that? So that's someone who engaged in an illicit relationship and birthed the mamzer. And we'll say, what's the problem now? What's the problem? The problem is, there is an irreversible consequence of my actions. You know, we'll say, we have like this incredible dialectic in Yiddishkeit, which is, on one hand we say, there is no avera from which you cannot recover. Right? Rabbi Nachman says, Ein shum yeish ba'olam klau. There's no such thing as a Jew saying, I'm done, I'm broken, I can't. That's always true. At the same time, what's also true? There are some things we do in life that cause irreparable damage. So I'll say, so like, how do you reconcile? I'll give you a good mashal. You ever have, this happens all the time. We'll just keep this between us, right? And whoever watches this on YouTube and the podcast and Spotify, and that, right? So listen to this. You ever have like a serious argument with your spouse? A serious argument with your wife, right? And let's say it was one of those rare occasions that you were wrong, right? I was wrong, I did it. So what do I do? I apologize. And like, it's one of those like heartfelt apologies, right? I even maybe like a little moisture in the corner of the eye, but like really I really genuinely feel bad, right? I do it. And mostly it's an incredible thing. What are you expecting in the aftermath of that apology, right? Right? We're good, right? Like, we're good. Everything, right? I'm expecting, let's get on with our day, right? You know, and everything. And then what? I'm sorry. And it does. And then what happens? Like, I was like, okay. Yeah, okay. And I'm like, but why aren't you acting normal? Like you know, why are you still upset? Why are you still this? And it's such an incredible thing. Because what we don't realize is that sometimes when traumatic things occur, things don't simply just bounce back to what they were. There's a trauma, and sometimes there's breakage. And that breakage, so I'm going to say, it's an incredible thing. So on one hand, can you do tshuva for any avera? Absolutely. Absolutely, tshuva is always possible, no matter how terrible the event may be. That being said, there is sometimes fallout and consequences from the things that we do that cannot simply be immediately erased. So that's true with the mamzer. And the mamzer gives another example of that, is adultery, ish is ish. And we'll say, and it makes sense, because what happens? A person, chas v'shalom, commits adultery. So what's happened over here? It's not just the pshat. We'll say, you know, if I go home, right, and I eat chazer, right, or I go home and I wear shatnez, or I. So again, that's between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The problem with adultery, Rabbi Yossi, is what? What's happened over here? It's not just me. Who else is it? It's another human being. And by the way, it's her husband, and it's my wife, and it's her kids, and my kids. And suddenly, again, there's like a dramatic ripple effect over here. So, okay, I could do tshuva. I could say, Hashamnu, Baganu, I could do tshuva. And I could really, like, repair this between me and God. The problem is, there's all of this other fallout that I often get. And we'll say, when you think about Avera in general in this way, it's not just by adultery. There are so many, the power of chet is sometimes the unintended ripple effects. I didn't mean the ripple effects. I just wanted to kind of like indulge in something. I just wanted to satisfy a want. And suddenly I realized in the aftermath of the act, there are so many other ripple effects that happen. And often what's incredible is, even after I do tshuva, I can't dial back. I can't take back all of the unintended consequences. So therefore, again, the Gemara says over here, can a person do tshuva for adultery? Of course, a person could do tshuva for anything. But just understand, there are effects of that act that you can't get the genie back in the bottle. Right? In other words, once you've committed the act, the unintended consequences cannot be dialed back. Incredible. I'm Rabbi Yochai. Call Adam, sheish magasas arachi le'ovin avodas kohalim. Incredible. Any person who's arrogant, it's as if he worshipped idolatry. Sivhaha. Tovas Hashem called Gvalev. It says over here, the abomination of Hashem, Gvalev, which is arrogant. Sivhasam, for those Savi Soiva El Besecha. So we'll say it's incredible. So we'll say, what's the Pshat? It makes perfect sense. Because what's idolatry? Idolatry ultimately, again, is an abandonment of all that is good. A person who's arrogant loses sense of anything but themselves. Again, we're going to talk a lot more about Gaiva. Let's just go quickly. We just have a few more minutes. So the Gemara says as follows. Incredible. A person who's a Baal Gaiva, it's as if, literally, again, he doesn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you're going to both say, what's the logic in that? The logic in that is simple. When a person is arrogant, there is no room in their life and no room in their heart for anyone other than themselves. Not even for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not even for a spouse, not even for children. Everything becomes about me. Wild. Right? Person is a Baal Gaiva, it's as if he had relations with every single one of the Arayas. Ksivacha. Tuavas Hashem called Gvalev. Uksivhasam, he has called Tuavos Hael. So we'll say he used the same notion of Tuaiva, abomination, by immorality and by arrogance. So we'll say it makes, again, what's the logic? The logic is when a person Chas v'Shalom suffers from arrogance, so again, all they're consumed by is themselves, and as such, there's no room, there's no bandwidth for any good, for any type of growth. And therefore, by definition, a person is setting themselves up for dramatic life failure. Ulamar kilu banabama. It's if a person built a bama. Shinei amar chadu lachem in ha'adma shen ha'shom ba'apo. Ki bama, or ki bima, nechshahu. Atikre bima, ela bama. So this is very profound, right? A person is a Baal Gaiva. This is the Dibra Dua Bosai. What's a bama? A bama is a personal altar. Personal altar, right? So we'll say it's incredible. You know when a person is a Baal Gaiva, you know what it's like? They built a Bama. By the way, who do they build the Bama to? Themselves. So I'll say arrogance is the worship of the self. Arrogant people are very from, right? They're part of the religion of the self. And who do they worship? Themselves. And who do they serve? Themselves. And who are they worried about? Themselves. I'll say, so what's arrogance? Arrogance is I built a Bama. And I sacrifice on it every single day to me. I am the be-all, end-all of life. Incredible. So Gemara says, "My yad, liyad lo yinok." What does yad mean? Am rav kolabal ishesish. I feelu hikneu la kolish baruch hushmai bars ke av mavinu dichsev bei harimosi yadi al Hashem kel elyon kone shayim by aretz lo yinokem medina shal gehenem. So we'll say. So ultimately, again, the Gemara says, "What does yad liyad mean? Even if a person was like, has the piety of Avram Avinu." Avram Avinu who went ahead and said, Harimosi Avi, I lift my hand to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kel El Yom. Even a person is like Avram Avinu, lifts his hand, literally again giving heaven and earth to Hashem, ultimately he will not be cleansed from the din of Gehenna. We'll say once again, why such severity attached to adultery? Because it represents one of these Avelos, where even if I get to a level of tshuva, at the end of the day, I cannot dial back the unintended consequences. We're going to stop here for today. We'll say, because again, we'll pick up with the... Actually, let's just finish this up. He says, even if like Moshe, fine, you push me. Let's just finish. He goes, says, even if like Moshe Rabbeinu dechsid bei, mimi no esh das lamo, lo yinake medino shagin. I'll both say, isn't this incredible? The Gemara is saying over here, I'll both say, I just want to point something out, which is just, it's so riveting. Here's what the Gemara is saying. Person commits adultery, even if they're like Avraham Avinu, where you totally use Lashon of Yad, even if they're like Moshe Rabbeinu, so ultimately, again, they're not going to be cleansed from the din of Gehenna. I'll both say, what's your kasha? Well, obviously, if you're committing adultery, then what? You're right. Excuse me, sir. I knew Avraham Avinu, and you are no Avraham Avinu, right? I knew Moshe, right? So what's that? You hear what the Gemara is saying over here? Even if a person is like Avraham Avinu, if he committed adultery, he can't be saved from the din of Gehenna. Even if a person was like a Moshe Rabbeinu, if he committed adultery, he can't be saved from Gehenna. Isn't that a stira minei obey? Isn't that an inherent contradiction? If you're committing adultery, you're not Aron Minei Obey. Let's see what Yisrael will say. Yisrael shechata, right? Yisrael afapi shechata. Yisrael will say, we all live with contradictions. We all live with contradictions. There are parts of me, and there are days, and there are moments where I am Kodesh Kadoshim. Where literally, again, I am Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, as I've mentioned this many times, the Sakhmer of the Chassid Kol Shel Brachah quotes the Halacha in Shulchan Aruch that says that if a mother can't nurse her child and has to hire a wet nurse, so ultimately she should try to go ahead and hire a Jewish woman to nurse her baby. Right? What's the makar for this Halacha? Moshe Rabbeinu. Because when you're Chabad, right, when Bas Para wasn't able to nurse, so ultimately, again, she hires a Jewish wet nurse. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu only nursed from a Jewish woman. Ask the Sakhmer of Zuchusa Yagin Aleinu. But that's Moshe Rabbeinu. Why are you bringing a raya from Moshe Rabbeinu to every single kid? And what's the answer? Because every single kid has the capacity to be a Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is telling you. So in other words, I want to say, we live with this dichotomy that on one hand, there are moments where I'm a Moshe. There are moments where I'm an Avraham Avinu. And yet, in the very next moment, right, I could be the lowest of the low. Right? And I want to say, that's the power of the Yid. I could soar to the highest heights, and I could also sink to the lowest depths as well. And it's not a contradiction. It's the same person. And I will say, we all live with these contradictions. Sometimes they're more pronounced, sometimes they're a bit more nuanced, but we always live. Like in Chassidus, there's this kind of ratza v'shov, right? There's a forward movement, a back movement, and that's always how I'm living. So no, it's not a contradiction to say that even a person who was like a Moshe Rabbeinu committed adultery, or a person who was like an Avraham Avinu committed, because all of us have this capacity for incredible spiritual greatness, but at the same time for making dramatic mistakes. And that's why in those moments, when we make dramatic mistakes and we think that we are down and out and cannot recover, we have to remember the tzad of Moshe Rabbeinu that exists with us, the tzad of Arvinu which exists with us. Okay, we'll say now, let's stop over here. Shkoyach, shkoyach. We're going to continue tomorrow.